Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Kelly Leonard is a regular guest with us. Every month or so, we ask him to come in, tell us something he's reading, and then he takes us on fascinating little journeys. He's got a podcast that you can listen to, too, which is called Getting to Yes And.
That's it.
Nice to see you again, Kelly.
Good to see you.
So what's on your mind today? What's the latest cool book you've read?
So cool book I read, and the podcast dropped last week with Cassie Holmes, who is a professor at UCLA who has written a new book called Happier Hours, How to Beat Distraction, Expand Your Time, and Focus on What Matters Most. So I thought, you know, we talk a lot about negative things and things we can't do, and this is a book about how to be more happy. And I know everyone's familiar with the term research. John, are you familiar with the term me-search?
No.
Okay, so me-search, and academics talk about this, Cassie talks about it, is the propensity of certain people, especially academics, to study the area that maybe they struggle in. So if you don't have a lot of influence, you study influence. If you have a lot of anxiety, you study anxiety. In this case, Cassie was grappling with being really unhappy, and so she shifted her eye to study happiness. So the unhappy part was grueling work schedule, thinking about quitting, that was looking forward to marrying the love of her life, and she's packing her car to go from LA to San Diego for the wedding week. She gets a call from her fiance, calls it off, breaks up. So not leaving her at the altar, but certainly leaving her at altar adjacent, I'd say, right? So she begins to study happiness, and the first thing she discovers is this data set from the American Time Use Survey. So that tested thousands of people about their use of time and their happiness. And it found that people with less than 2 hours of discretionary time in a day, so 2 hours of free time, were less happy. And she calls that position, that condition being time poor. Interestingly, at the other end of the spectrum, people who had more than 5 hours of discretionary time in the day, that was linked to being negative and less happy. And when I was thinking about that, she doesn't write about it in the book, but I have seen studies of lottery winners and that they're not happier after they win even these big chunks of money. And I thought, well, they might quit their job. They might think that a life of leisure is going to make them happier.
They might move to a neighborhood they don't know.
Right. And the last time I was on here, I was talking about the importance of relationships. And that's what was also discovered in this study, that the most important thing in terms of people's happiness is their strong relationships and having time to like sit and have a coffee with someone. There's three sort of major unhappy things that we have to do in our life. Do you want any guesses on what those might be?
Wait, these are three things to do to not be?
These are three things that make us unhappy that
three
we all have to do.
Things that make us unhappy, but we have to do them anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, work?
Work.
What else makes us unhappy? Interact with relatives?
No, that's not one of them.
Okay, enough about me. I don't know. What are the other two?
The other two are commuting.
Yeah.
And then housework.
Uh-huh.
That all checks for me.
And by the way, that's a full day for some people. I mean,
that is a full day.
Those are the three things that make us unhappy. Work, commuting, and our jobs.
Housework. Yeah, housework.
Oh, housework, our employment, and our trip back and forth.
Right.
So what are we going to do about that?
Well, so the big thing is how do you reclaim some time? And she has some ideas of that we've talked about in this podcast, like what's your email inbox look like?
Oh, I know.
Remember that?
I know. I still haven't done it. How many unread email or what's the number next to your email icon on your phone?
Right now it's 17 in my inbox.
And what was it at one point?
It was usually hovering around 400.
Okay, mine's 19,000.
Yeah, that's not good.
I know it isn't, and it really is, and it's a happiness suck every time I look at that number.
Yeah, yeah, and she says that was for her as well. So practicing sort of digital hygiene is one thing you can do. And the other thing is sort of like, well, where are we putting our awareness? So there's another podcast that I've recorded. It hasn't dropped yet, and it's with Don DePondi. That's his name.
Which is already a happy person.
Don DePondi, yeah.
How can you not be happy if your name's Don DePondi?
Yeah, one name. He was a Hindu monk for 10 years. Doesn't do that anymore. He's now an entrepreneur. And he's written this book about the power of unwavering focus. And his contention is, even from an early age, we're all told to focus, right? When we're little kids, like, hey, focus, focus up. Who's teaching us to focus?
No, nobody.
Nobody. And it's not something like, you don't practice meditation. You either do meditation, which is a practice, but there are ways that you can practice focus. And he has this really, I found this useful, this framework, and I want to see if you do as well. He says, think of the mind as a mansion with many rooms. You are not your mind. All right? The mind is a mansion with many rooms. You are not your mind. You are where you put your awareness. And your awareness can only be in one room at a time. So if you decide to put your awareness in the negative or fear-based room, that's just going to put more energy into that room. But if you put your awareness into a positive room, it's like watering a garden. It grows more energy.
Am I ignoring my problem, though?
I don't think you are.
That one room gets bigger if I don't...
I don't see how, like dwelling in positivity is
fair enough. I know that. Well, right. How does dwelling on things you can't fix right now, or maybe you can't change at all, how does that fix it?
Right. And I mean, I think we have stories of people like Nelson Mandela who were stuck in a prison who decided to focus on building relationships with the guards who guarded him, and guess what? I mean, like, he came out as a, he got out. He had a successful career. Those guards talked about reconciliation. And I mean, it's like, this is how one changes the world.
The title of the book that you came in with is Happier Hours.
Yeah.
Happier Hours, How to Beat Distraction, Expand Your Time, and Focus on What Matters Most. Kelly Leonard is here. He's the Executive Director of Learning and Applied Improvisation at Second City Works. He's also the host of that podcast we mentioned a minute ago, Getting to Yes And. But I wonder, and you can find out more at secondcityworks.com. Let's pause and come back. And is this book a bit of a guide, though? Are there, like, concrete steps I can take?
Yep.
Maybe I'll imagine rooms like the monk, the ex-monk said.
Yeah.
Who knew? The funny people in town, the people that put on those funny shows, are actually very good at applying the skills from the stage to interpersonal relations and business applications. I mean, that's really what you do, right?
Yeah, I had someone last week go, your podcast isn't funny. I'm like, well, I'm occasionally witty, I hope, but no, that's not the point. It's the point that we have this rich improvisational pedagogy, which is applicable to any sort of human interaction. And my guests, primarily academics, scientists, they concur. So in the area of happiness, I brought two things to Cassie that we do at Second City.
And, this is and Cassie Holmes, who wrote the book Happier Hours.
Yeah. So in improvisation, we talk about you need to focus on making your partner look good. And if everyone does that, things work really well. Now, when someone doesn't and it becomes unequal, that's a problem. But, you know, Second City cast is six people who have been trained in this. That's what they do. And that's the reason the shows are funny and good, is because they're all focused on the success of the other person. Wouldn't we all want to live in that world? The other adage we have is, in any endeavor, bring a brick, not a cathedral. So many of us walk into rooms with our cathedral in our mind, not recognizing that to get anything done, we all have to work together. And so why not you bring a brick, the other person has a brick, then there's another brick, and you build it together.
Repeat those two rules.
Make your partner look good, and bring a brick, not a cathedral.
I've listened to radio shows and just seen interpersonal communications where somebody is saying something and there's a conversation, there's some dynamic activity going on, and then somebody doesn't row in the same direction. And I guess it's difficult, and you hate to see that, right? I mean, it just kills the conversation or the comedy or the spontaneity. It's
yeah.
not, you know, it's not working, but it sounds so logical when you say that, but here's the point. That person is thinking, no, I think I have a better idea.
Right.
So maybe it's not running against it, but it's derivative of it. So how do you insert that?
Well, there's a place for that. And really, this whole yes-and concept is about early-stage creativity, early-stage building something. When you have to create something out of nothing, you get nowhere by saying no, and you don't get anywhere by saying yes, but. We say you say yes and, you affirm and contribute in order to explore and heighten. Do that for the first 10 minutes. You know, then you can start cutting stuff down and figuring things out, or you're going down a different path. But, you know, I've interviewed so many creativity experts who say it's not about one great idea. It's about 1,000 ideas, and the great idea reveals itself, and often in a surprising way.
Hmm. So this book, though, Happier Hours,
yeah,
it sounds like the sweet spot is to have 2 to 5 hours of free time a day. Is that right?
Two to four.
2 to 4 hours.
Yeah.
If you have fewer than two, it's going to be harder to be happy.
You're time poor.
But if you're time rich, you have more than 4 or 5 hours.
And that ain't good either.
So for those of you who have retired or are thinking about it, or as you said, win the lottery, don't think that not having anything to do is going to make you happy. I guess that's not a great revelation, but then you got to be proactive about it, huh?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have ways of I think retirement's great, and I think a lot of people look. We have a whole program called Humor Doesn't Retire, which is for that older set that comes in, and we've had like kids gift it to their parents because they were seeing something they didn't like. Huh. And I remember my wife told me the story that happened, and it was a former student of hers who was basically in tears of like, look, my dad, who used to always at Thanksgiving sort of escape to another room to watch a game instead of engaging people, now stays with the group, tells terrible jokes, and the jokes are just bad. He has not gotten funny, but what he has gotten is engaged, and that's the kind of thing. Especially, look, there's a loneliness epidemic. This is I think well known in this country, and especially affects older people.
A loneliness epidemic.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's because they don't get a chance to play with other humans, and so this idea of staying in relationship, again, we talked about this last time I was here, is just so crucial.
So, Happier Hours. I asked you if there's some steps.
Yeah.
I don't mean hacks, but how do I do this then?
All right. This is going to sound a little weird coming from the yes and guy, but it's the importance of saying no. So, you know, if something's going to eat up your time and it's not going to bring you joy, and someone else can get around this, you should be able to say no.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Memo to self. Okay.
Here's a cool one. She goes, sometimes taking a physical count of how much time you have left helps you focus on the importance of that time. So Cassie uses the example of walking her son Leo to preschool, and one day Leo kept stopping to smell the flowers, and Cassie caught herself saying, Leo, we do not have time to stop and smell the roses.
That's apocryphal. That didn't really happen.
If it didn't, it's very funny.
I know, anyway. Tell it anyway.
Yeah. So what she did was she calculated how many days she had left walking him to preschool, and they had used up 80%. She had 20 left. And she goes, that's a way of pushing you towards, I'm going to take advantage of this time and be in this moment with my child rather than looking at my phone or be worried about getting somewhere.
Mm. Boy, that almost makes you sad to think I've only got so many days with my kid at this stage or in this place.
Yeah.
But if nothing else, it makes you appreciate him, I guess, huh?
Yeah. The other thing I really found interesting is she talks about happiness means different things to different people of different ages. So that for a 20-year-old, going out to a party or a concert could constitute an ideal state of happiness. For a 60-year-old, it could be quietly sitting in the garden. So building your empathetic muscles to recognize that, and I know this is true for a 56-year-old me, I like sitting in the garden reading my book.
Yeah.
I like sitting in the garden listening to my music. I love going to concerts as well, so I do that, but not the majority of the time. But when I was a young person, majority of the time, concerts. And if we can understand that there's not like, what makes me happy might not make you happy. Again, this idea of focusing on making your partner look good. Start with that first, and I think you unlock a lot more possibility than starting the other way.
Hmm. And I guess a corollary to that would be to allow somebody their version of happiness. How many times do we drag somebody into something or to do something because it makes me happy, but it's not the thing that makes them happy?
Yeah.
And you think you can sort of educate them on how to be happy. And they go, no, I really want to sit in a garden. I don't want to go with you to the game.
Yeah.
This is my version of happiness.
My son is dating an extrovert. And even though he's a performer, like his mom, he's an introvert. And it's they've struck a real happy balance, which he will go to the party they wouldn't normally go to, and then he's not going to go shopping. He has to find someone else to go shopping with.
I remember my son was on a baseball team, and I asked him what he missed a few years ago about baseball. And I thought it would be the thrill of a hit or something on the field. And he said, what do I miss the most about being on the baseball team? I miss the bus rides.
Yeah.
And I said, oh my God, that's always sounded like torture to me, because he'd be in Indianapolis and he'd have a game in Ohio, and it'd be these long, you know, bus trips. And he goes, that was the best time of my life. All of us guys on the bus, you know, yakking and smacking and being with the guys. He said, I miss the bus trips. I would never have guessed that, because that would have been hell to me to be on these long bus trips down the highway to go play baseball. It just didn't sound like fun to me at all. I thought that was the price you had to pay. To him, it was a feature, not a bug.
I think we, especially as we grow older, we have less unstructured times to simply be in playful conversation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that sucks.
Oh, well, I know. We regard it as a waste of time at times. I don't have time for this silliness.
Yeah, and it's sort of like when you... what's the point of being here?
I know. So then this being on Earth thing, the large brain ones, what are we doing?
We're supposed to rush through it all?
I know.
It sort of makes no sense whatsoever.
I think happiness as an end game, as an objective, not as a means, is almost worth contemplating, isn't it? It's okay to just try and be happy, as long as it doesn't disregard the necessities of life.
Exactly. Right? And I think if you look at it through the lens of, again, where's my focus right now? Where's my awareness right now? And I don't think we think that way. I think when we think about happiness, we see it as like, well, the next promotion, you know, or something like that. And it's like, no.
Does more money make people happier?
No. I mean, there's thresholds, right? I mean, too little money is real tough for people. But overall, no. Once you reach a certain threshold, it doesn't change.
Yeah, I suppose. Memo to self on that. All right. So this conversation with Cassie Holmes, who wrote the book Happier Hours, drops now.
It's up on the website right now. It was last week's podcast. And then the Don DePonte will be in October.
Kelly, it's good to see you again.
Good to see you.
It's good to hear you again. Executive Director of Learning and Applied Improvisation at Second City Works. She's the host of that Getting to Yes and podcast. We host it here at WGNRadio.com or wherever you hear podcasts. And you can find out more from Kelly at SecondCityWorks.com.